I've been interested in percolation for quite a while, and some of the classic problems in percolation, by now classic, going back to the early 90s, are looking at universal properties of crossing problems, like going back to Cardi and Langlands and other people worked on in the early 90s. And then more recently, there's been a huge interest in the mathematics world with all the SLE looking at various crossing problems. The reason that's interesting is because of universal properties. It's a universal property of percolation. The original universal properties people looked at were things like critical exponents, scaling functions, amplitude ratios. And then, as I mentioned, people became interested in crossing problems. But I'm going to talk about another universal property, which are density contours. This work, by the way, is with quite a bit of it is with Peter Kleban, who's at the University of Maine, and Jacob Simons, or Simmons, I should say, who was a student of Peter's, but we worked together, and he defended his thesis yesterday, and he's going to work with John Cardi as a postdoc in a few months. Also, Kevin Dahlberg is an undergraduate who made a few of these figures. So I'm concerned with finding the density of percolation clusters. Now, at first thought, that might raise some question, because true percolation, when you take the limit that the mesh size goes to zero, there's no density. Percolation clusters have zero density in the true limit of a true fractal, complete fractal. But you could look at a renormalized density in a sense that I'll show you that, that in a sense, normalize it a certain way and come up with a finite value of the density. And those are the that we're going to look at. So by the density, I mean we're going to look at clusters that satisfy a certain criterion, such as clusters that touch the boundary at a given point. And essentially, the operational way to do this when you're running a computer simulation is just generate a million representations of the system, and then look at all of the points on the lattice that satisfy that criterion, that touch that point, and then you know divide by the total number of samples, and that gives you what the density is. And I said here, it goes to zero, then, so we have to renormalize it. There's an overall constant that's kind of irrelevant. There's no absolute definition of the constant. So here's a picture of a typical percolating system. This happens to be slightly below the percolation threshold, but anyway, it's roughly what it's like in percolation. And this is bond percolation, and what I'm showing here are the colors of the sites that are connected together by the bonds in the same cluster. And so these are all the sites that are wetted by the bonds. And you see all the different colors. So between a boundary here, there's not one bond that connects that side to that side. If you add a few more bonds, which I could do in the computer, it's kind of fun to watch, then the whole color will change.
What's the color of these end of the five bonds?
Well, this is bond percolation. Okay. So this is one way to do the simulation. You start off with every site a different color. And then you start putting bonds in one at a time. And if a bond bridges two sites or of different colors, then you make them both the same color. And the whole cluster is connected to the same color. And then we can pick a point. For example, I say, I want to find the density of all the clusters touching here. Well, now this is one representation. The cluster is just some fractal object. But then if you repeat this over and over again and find the average, you get the density. And this is if you just do exactly what I showed you, repeat it. You know, not too many times. This was done on a little laptop computer, an old version, several years ago, but maybe a few million times completed, and find the contours, you end up with these curves right here. And I guess one theme of my talk I'm going to tell you is interaction with kind of more of an experimentalist, what I am. Experiments and computers, and the theorist, which was Peter Kleban, did most of the theory. And this whole piece of work, yes.
Can you explain this picture?
Okay. Let me just finish. All this work, my work, this guy's thesis that he just finished yesterday, the whole thing started off with this picture right here. So all I did is I took this picture right here, and I looked at, you know, the cluster that touches this point. And then I did it again and again and again and again and again. And then I counted each, say I did it a million times, and I take each point and I counted how many times that point was connected to the cluster that connected to the anchor point on the bottom. And then I did this arbitrary color that just shows the contour lines. So the density drops off here as a function of distance. So the density is highest here, and these are just some arbitrary colors just to make it look nice. And the density is slowly dropping off as it goes out. And the density, you know, the corners and the edges, it goes way, way down. The density goes to zero at all the boundaries.
So this was done in a finite system, really rectangular.
That's the system right there.
And the point is not exactly at the bottom, right? It's just like...
The point, it just got all blurred up. The point is exactly at the bottom.
The boundaries?
These are open boundaries. In other words, open boundaries, not...
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay, read.
Yeah, like this picture is periodic boundaries. So,
okay, so if it's at the...
Yeah.
All these curves seem to encircle a point which is not on the bottom.
Right. Well... No, this is the right point. Just ignore all this stuff. They're all touching that point right there. I'll show you a better curve that might clear it out a little bit. It just gets all blurred up there at the bottom. But you'll see that these curves go around like this and go here and touch there at that point right there. So, first I'm going to spend a few minutes just to talk about density, something like this well-known, I said in the bottom here. This is the well-known density. What if you have a simpler system that I showed you here, have essentially an infinite system, and you take a point in space, and you want to look at the density of the clusters connected to that point. And it's pretty well-known, so I'll start off by talking about that. Now, there are two ways, there are actually two possibilities. You could look at a given point and essentially the infinite cluster that connects to that point. You can look at the density as a function of distance for the infinite cluster. Or you could look at an ensemble of all possible representations, so you have the finite clusters plus the infinite clusters. And the density is different in the two cases, of course.
What value of P are we going to be at? Slightly above threshold?
Always at PC, exactly at PC.
So I'm not exactly sure what we mean by the infinite cluster, because there sort of isn't going to be one.
At PC, yeah, there isn't a cluster. This is the old question between mathematicians and physicists. Let's just say the largest cluster in the box. The largest cluster. Okay. There is always a largest cluster, except for the case that there are two clusters exactly the same size.
In a box.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. I think there isn't. No, it's true. At the critical point, there are an infinite number of infinite clusters. You want to know the truth. When you take the mesh size, go to zero. But I know mathematicians will say there's zero infinite clusters. So that's the conflict we'll have to talk over next time they get the cognac out. I think some of you might recognize this formula. If you have a fractal object, the mass grows as r to the power d. So now we assume that the percolation, now we're looking at the single infinite cluster. And if the mass follows r to the d, then it follows immediately that the density, which is the mass in a shell, r plus dr minus m of r, which is the pointer, divided by, you know, the volume of the shell, r to the constant r to the d minus 1 dr, of course it's the derivative, and you end up with the density, this well-known formula, is r to the, I got this. I got this. I'm sorry, I got this backwards here. Should have a minus sign in front of this. Or capital D minus little d, the codimension, the difference between the fractal dimension, capital D, and the spatial dimension, little d.
That, can you push the computer screen down?
I'll solve the problem. I don't know. Sorry. Okay. Anyway, the well-known, the density drops as R to this codimension 5 over 96. That's for a single cluster. But now, if you just picked a point at random in a system, you could have hit a finite cluster, too. You might not have hit the infinite cluster. So then, and this is well-known in all the books on the subject, that if you pick a point in space, the probability of hitting a cluster of exactly S sites is S times the number of clusters per site of S sites. And at the critical point, the number of clusters of S sites is S to the minus tau. So the probability of hitting a cluster of exactly S sites is S to the 1 minus tau. Number tau is 2.05, 187 over 91 in two dimensions. Therefore, the probability of hitting a cluster, drop a point in space, hit a cluster of size greater than S, in other words, that point belongs to a cluster of size greater than S, S to the 2 minus tau. So tau is about 2.05, so it's a very low, it drops off very slowly. So now we ask, that's greater than S. Now we now want to know the probability that the radius is greater than R. So use the fractal dimension, S goes as R to the D, put it into there, and then you find the probability greater than R is R to the same exact thing, the codimension. And we also use the hyperscaling relation, tau minus 1 is D over D. Put that in there, that. And then you end up with that the probability, so if you have now in the ensemble of systems, the density is the probability, the density at a distance R is the probability that that point belongs to a cluster, at least as big as R, times the density of an infinite or of a cluster, if it's greater than R, you might as well call it infinite, of radius R, and you get R to the 2 times the codimension. So there are these two ways of looking at the density, single cluster or the ensemble of the whole thing, and they have these two different power laws. But the main point from here is they have both power laws in R. And so the contours, I didn't bother to draw them, are obviously circles, if you drew the actual circles in this. It's kind of interesting to compare this with a crossing problem, because I mentioned this is a very interesting interest right now. We can look at crossing in an annulus, the probability of going from the inside to the outside of an annulus. Well, the probability that a cluster crosses this annulus, and I assume the outside is much bigger than the inside diameter, is exactly the same as looking at, get rid of the outside circle and let it go to infinity, and then just say, if there is a cluster that connects to the inside circle whose radius is greater than R, then if I put that outside circle in there, I would get crossing. So in other words, the pi, the crossing probability of radius R, is exactly the same as the probability that there be cluster of size greater than R, which is R to this codimension. So there's a certain relation between density and crossing probability. Again, before I go into some of the other stuff, let me emphasize, of course, we have conformal invariance in percolation, which means if we take a conformal transformation, then two things. The crossing probabilities are invariant. So, for example, here I could take z is x plus iy, and it's I there, x here. I take this transformation, so it becomes, I can draw the arrows in PowerPoint, but it goes around here, and it goes around back again. And if this is a periodic right here, then it connects right here. So the periodic strip, which is also known as a cylinder, becomes transformed into the annulus, or just the same as taking the cylinder and squishing it out. And the point is, the probability of crossing, let's say, from the left end of the cylinder to the right end of the cylinder, is identical to the probability of crossing from the inner circle to the outer circle of the annulus if you know, then you take e to the 0 and you get 1, and e to the x, e to the 2 pi x, and you get e to the 2 pi x. And so the, if the ratio between the two is 2 pi x, then the transformation is the same. So in other words, the horizontal crossing probability here is the same as the annular crossing probability I had in the other page, where you place r by e to the 2 pi x, that's r, and then you put it in, and then you find this result of the horizontal crossing probability in a cylinder for large values of x. This is related to Cardy's formula. Cardy's formula has a strip where it's not a cylinder, the open rectangle. And the asymptotic behavior there, the exponent, instead of being minus 5 over 24, is 1/3. So it's different here because of this. But how do, okay, this is how crossing changes, but how do densities transform under conformal transformation? Well, it turns out, and this actually goes back to the work of Cardy too, that the density, which is, you can think of it, it's worthwhile to think of it as a function of z and z bar, and then you make the transformation, this is like an order parameter transformation, and you actually have to multiply it by this derivative, which is related to the conformal transformation, there's a certain contraction or expansion. And that h is again the same codimension, 5 over 96. And you just put that w into that formula over there, the w for another page into here, and work it all out. And it turns out that now let's look at the crossing, that the density of those two classes of clusters, one is the infinite cluster, one is the single infinite cluster, one is the collection. The single infinite cluster, then you, I'm sorry, I'm getting it backwards. If you take the single infinite cluster and you transform it to a strip, the density becomes constant. Because if you have a strip of infinitely fine mesh, the infinite cluster will just go across all space and will actually be constant density. In other words, these terms cancel out that term. But then if you look at the horizontal cross the density in the horizontal case where you have all of the clusters, you find it drops off, the density drops off exponentially like this. And notice that there's a relationship between the crossing probability and the density. They're the same, asymptotically for large x. And the reason why is that if you assume that the density is constant and then the cluster dies, then the crossing probability, the density is exactly the same as the probability that the x max is greater than x, so it's the same as the crossing probability. This is only true in this particular geometry. Well, okay, now that I kind of went over some old stuff, boring old stuff, just to show you those power laws, now I'll show you what happens when we calculate this particular problem. You apply these boundary operators. It also goes back to the work of Cardy, where these operators, and this relates to having an anchor at the origin on the boundary. You really take the upper half complex plane here. So we're going to look at a problem, the upper half plane, and this is an operator for finding a particle at the point z on the upper half plane, but you could actually average over the whole plane by putting image at z bar and going through the theory, the result is in a complex plane that the density, this means of one point, is just given by this simple formula here. And you put in these two h's here, this corresponds to the dimension of the density I just showed you, and this 1/3 corresponds to the surface exponent. You put these into the formula and then you can simplify it. And it turns out, if you have, this is the problem I showed you before, I have an anchor at the origin, and you look at a point, here I converted, just wrote in terms of r and y, or r and theta, it shows the density as a function of that position. So, this is another simulation, this is a little maybe better than that first one I showed you. That first one I showed you, I ran so many simulations that I squeezed all the contour lines so close together they became a big mess. This is when you run it with a lot fewer simulations, and here you can see a lot better that all the clusters are touching that single point right here. And here, it looks like I did a half infinite system, but of course I can't on the computer, so I just did a much bigger system, and I'm just enlarging that area near the origin there. And this is exactly that formula. This is all it takes in mathematics to plot it, that I take y to the 1140 a's divided by r to the minus 2/3, or x squared plus y squared to the minus 1/3, and you plot it, and you end up with these contours right here.
Well, but you could actually do the Schwarz-Christoffel to the triangle.
I will. I'll say something about this, kind of interesting. If you multiply it by y to the 5/48, then this, or I should say, divided by y to the 5/48, this becomes y to the 16/48, which is 1/3, and then you get y over x squared plus y squared. And then values of constant density become perfect circles. So if you just multiply it by y to the minus 5/48, these become actually perfect circles. And another interesting point is you could also do a simple transformation that it becomes exactly the same as the contours of a dipole in electrostatics raised to a power of 5/48, I think it is. So there's a connection between what you get here and you get in electrostatics. Now, as Olivia just suggested, take a Schwarz transformation to a square, and this is how you do it in Mathematica with this Weierstrass elliptic function, and so on and so forth. And then you make the new function change the variables, and here we could put that little point anywhere, and you plot it. And here I turned it 90 degrees, but this is, again, is that first slide I showed you, and this is what the theoretical. Now, here's the next input from simulation. These three of these results are simulation, and one is theory. I'm not too sure which one is theory. One in the bottom is a theory, one is simulation. And then, let's see. Okay. Oh, yeah, right. Okay, Alex. I take that back. None of these are theory. These are all simulation. Let me explain. This is if I put the anchor not centered, but on the side right here. Here I put the anchor point up here. It's like 3/8 and 5/8 the way up. Here I ran a simulation in which I looked at clusters that touch both anchor points simultaneously. In other words, all particles, the density of particles that simultaneously touch those two anchor points. And literally, this is actually a case where I ran this simulation, and these, I said, well, maybe I multiply these two together, and I'll get that. And it didn't quite work. And then I tried taking the square root, and it was identical. You take this times that, take the square root, and just multiply by a factor to make the contours line up, and it became identical. And then we went back to the theory. Turns out it just follows directly from the boundary, from the conformal field theory, that's the case, but something you might not have expected or not have thought of doing. It only works, in a sense, what these really are. Let me go back a second. These are really three-point, you can think of it as three-point correlations. You can think of these two points as the anchor, this is the density, or you can think of it the other way around. This is an anchor, that's an anchor, and this is the density. In other words, it's just a probability that all those three points are connected together. It turns out this only works, this square root superposition only works if you have two points on the boundary. If you have all three points on the boundary, it's trivial. But it's not quite trivial if you have two points in the boundary. But it turns out you could show theoretically that, so this is on the complex plane, the anchors are, let's say, at xA and xB on the real axis, really could be anywhere in the boundary. It doesn't even have to be a square or a rectangle. The problem, the density or the probability, these three points are connected together. It's the square root, this is like the square root of the density from one anchor, the square root of the density of the other anchor. But actually, then you multiply by the probability that, that those two points are connected together. Take the square root of the whole thing, and then I check this numerically. You have to throw in a little factor of C there, and then you get them all to match up. Turns out you have to, you could take Z go to XA. If Z goes to XA, this goes to 1. And if Z goes to XA, this becomes identical to that. And so you find that P of XA XB equals P of XA XB, and actually that C would equal 1. And this is true if you look at, you know, if you do one run on the computer and say the probability that the density at an anchor point, that's exactly 1, and so on and so forth. So exactly, so when one of the points, when Z hits one of the anchor points, the probability becomes exactly 1. But then when it goes just a few lattice spacings away, we have to multiply by a constant. And I thought this was just an arbitrary constant, I mean a non-universal constant. But I tried it for site percolation, tried for bond percolation, so it was the same exact constant. 1.03 plus or minus 0.001. And this is another chapter. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, first of all, here is the theoretical prediction, right? Take the square root of those two results and you get the same as this over here. And then also in this thesis, which as I mentioned was defended yesterday, in a quite lengthy calculation that I'm not going to try to reproduce here, Jake showed that that constant is given by this beautiful result. And instead of 1.03, which I found numerically, it's 1.02999. It turns out that this immediately brings up what looks a lot like the coefficient in Cardy's formula raised to a certain power, 3/2 power or something like this. And actually there's a relation and I'll explain it. Cardy's formula tells the probability, the crossing probability when you have a strip or a rectangle, the open boundaries on the side and crossing from the bottom. Make a conformal transformation of that geometry, it becomes, if you open it out, and you can make the bottom a half circle, it becomes related to the problem of a half plane with a half circle, the density of all the clusters touching that half circle. But I'm sorry, that's the probability of going through maximum distance. Well, it turns out to analyze this problem, we have the two anchor points, and we replace, to go to a continuum, we replace the anchor points by 2 half circles where you want to know the probability of reaching those half circles. This doesn't prove it, but it's showing you why it's related to Cardy's result. It's related to this transformation of that geometry to this. So, you know, I get carried away here, but this, if I look at 2 anchor points in the set in inside, so these are all the clusters connected to that point, cluster connected to that point. And okay. And a boundary anchor point. Okay, so I'm sorry, here I'm looking at 3 systems. And it turns out that for more complicated situations, this little blip, this is showing the ratio of these two, the ratio of the probability that the density around all these 3 points versus the square root of the product of all 3 of those. And it turns out this doesn't look like much, but there's a deviation close to all the anchor points, so that relation does not hold.
Is it possible to calculate the contribution of the infinite cluster to this density?
The infinite cluster to?
To the density profile. Whenever they touch along the infinite.
I'm always looking at, operationally, I always look at finite systems. And I think in the limit of the system getting larger and larger, the infinite cluster will have an insignificant contribution. That's my
point. But this population is not conditioned. I don't think it's conditioned. It's just the fact that they have connected.
Yeah, right. That's all. Anyway, just to show you a few more of these nice things you can do. So now once you get this going, and I'll show you some Mathematica stuff in a minute, you could just say, well, I want to know clusters touching the top and the bottom of the square. Well, all I got to do is take that result I found by the Schwarz-Christoffel transformation, then flip it around, take the two together, multiply them, take the square root of it, and then I should get clusters that touch the top and the bottom. What those density profiles look like. And again, here's simulations on the left, and there's that theory on the right. Now I could take this thing right here and let that upper point go off to infinity. And then I could kind of let these sides go off to infinity too. In other words, just enlarge the central area here. And then what I'll be finding, this actually relates to your question right now, the density of of points that touch just the infinite cluster. Actually, in a way, I didn't answer your question, right? It's true, the contribution for a cluster goes to zero, but you could, as you say, do it a conditional on the cluster such that they're the infinite cluster. Then you'll get this result, and this is exactly the result I have right here. And then you expand it out, and this is what you get, the density of ones conditional on touching the infinite cluster. And this is the density of all of them. And mathematically, well, here I wrote this too nicely, but mathematically, the ones touching the infinite cluster has its power minus a 6, and the other ones have the power minus a 3rd. That's the only difference. And the reason why is very simple, because we take this square root hypothesis, and all I have to do is multiply the rho of z I found before, multiplied, I think I got it backwards. I just multiplied the old rho of z I had before, well, this is the old rho z of rho 1, multiplied by the density of a point at far infinity. But the density of a point far at infinity, I'll show you in a second, is just y to the 11/48. If you have something far at infinity, the infinite cluster, as you approach the real axis, its density goes to 0 as y to the 11/48. You take these two together, pick the square root, and you get this. So you get r to the 1/3 instead of r to the 2/3.
But the core always in the constant.
Within a constant.
So, in a slightly different language, this is the system size goes to infinity.
Yeah.
Two different questions, because you have two different answers.
Yeah.
So the question is, what are the questions? One is the density, given that it touches the other side,
yeah,
and the other is just the density.
Right, right.
And the claim is now that these powers differ, the density power differs by 2.
Yeah, that's right. That's it, right. But you know, you can say touch the other side, but you can say touch one point on the other side, touch the whole other side.
Oh, but it has
it
to
doesn't go matter. It has to touch something far away, and then it's the infinite cluster. Right. Yeah.
Pardon? You keep saying the infinite cluster, but you said yourself it doesn't infinite number, it's infinite cluster. Right, so that's why.
Okay, touching an infinite cluster.
Yeah.
An infinite cluster. Okay. If you have a finite system with a finite mesh size, there's a largest cluster, and we're touching that one. Or we could do conditional, touching, given that it touches this point and the other side. There can only be one point. There can only be one cluster because there's only one point here. So given it touches this point and the other side, there's only one possible cluster. So let's say that. Clearest conditional argument. No? You don't agree?
Yeah.
But there can only be one cluster touching this point.
He's doing something in a finite box, so we have to ask about
that. Well, I know maybe you're thinking the mesh size is infinitely small, and that point is a little.
If the cluster is the largest cluster, then it might not be the one that touches here and there. There might be a largest cluster.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying a cluster that touches this point and a point far away. There's only one cluster there. Okay. This was a result, this followed from the thing I showed you right at the beginning, that if you had a boundary here, and let's just look at, now I'm going to look at touching a whole boundary instead of a single point. Up till now I talked about clusters touching a single point. Let's talk about clusters touching an entire boundary. So here I just showed one line here. What I mean is, all the clusters that touch this point, an infinite number or a finite number of infinite ones, doesn't matter. Every cluster touching this point, and let's look at the density of the clusters touching that line. Okay. Then it follows that density goes as y to the minus 5 over 24. It goes to infinity as you go to the line here, and it dropped. As you approach that line, it goes to infinity. Now again, there's this whole normalization question. If you do a computer simulation, it never goes to infinity, it just goes to 1. But if you just keep making the mesh size smaller and smaller, and you normalize it so the density at a certain point far away is constant, then because you renormalize it, the density will go higher and higher, and as you let the mesh size go to 0, then then the density will go to infinity in the boundary. Or another way of saying it is really the density is 0 everywhere except right at the boundary, but if you renormalize it by some constant value, that's how it would diverge. Okay, this was well known before, but now let me look at the density that they're touching two boundaries simultaneously. Okay? Here we did some computer simulations. Now I won't do the two infinite things I did before, the strip, but here I'll do a finite box. It's a perfectly finite box of 512 by 512 sites, like my first picture. And I'm looking at all of the clusters that are crossing. These are all the classic Cardan clusters, the ones that go from the top to the bottom. Touch at least one point on the top and one point on the bottom. And then just find the density of all those, and then we found the contour lines of the density. Here I'm showing the contours a little bit different. This is what my undergraduate student worked on. This is the way he made a program to try to find where the contour points are and then plotted it here. And it's normalized so the density is 1 right in the center. And here we find something, which at first I was really amazed with, that the density is highest in the center. You think it's crossing from the top to the bottom. Maybe the density should be higher at the top and the bottom. But it's the opposite. It's highest at the center. And the reason why is because it just has to touch one point at the top and one point at the bottom. So, but it could spread out all through the center. Or another way of saying it is there are a lot more paths that cross the center than paths that cross the edges. So the density is highest at the center and lowest at the top and bottom. In fact, incredibly, the density goes to 0 at the top and the bottom, just as it does on the left and the right. We have open boundaries. The top and the bottom, we say it has to touch those two points. It goes to 0 at the top and the bottom, in the limit, of course, where you make it larger and larger, because basically, like I said, it just has to touch at one point. And it's almost symmetric, but not completely symmetric.
But that's because it's most probable that it only touches a very little bit on the top and the bottom.
That's right. Or another way of saying it is, you know, if you think of taking like a truly infinite system, you know, at the critical point, you chop it off, and you look at the boundary, you chop it off. By the action of chopping it off, you create a lot more holes near the boundary at percolation. When you cut off, if you take a lattice and just cut it off somewhere, you create a lot more holes because you don't have all the paths that went through the boundary and back again. So as you get near a boundary in percolation, the density goes to 0. Okay, it turns out that because this involves 6 operators, it's not too easy to calculate this. So my colleagues who worked this out haven't worked out the density, but actually we can work out the density at the boundaries and in a few situations. So let me show you that. Open. Okay. I shouldn't take too much more time, so let me just whisk through the results here. It turns out that you can, in the limit where you stretch that out to a half infinite half strip, and you look at all the clusters that touch both the top and the bottom, the density follows this formula over here. The density goes to 0, y equals 0, and I made the thickness equal to 1. So y equals 0, y equals 1. It looks like it goes to infinity, but it turns out you have cosine is 1, minus 1, and actually goes to 0 at the two limits. And then you can take the limit that the upper half, the upper boundary goes to infinity just at the lower boundary. And then the density grows as y to the plus 1148. So as I told you, at a wall, the density goes to 0 at the wall. So if you looked at all the clusters, we had y to the minus 5/48. If you look at just the infinite clusters, the density goes to y to the plus 1148. Because the density starts at 0 and grows as you go away from the wall. Actually, the way we solve that is you could look at the density of all of clusters that touch either side. This was known before from Ted Burkhardt and Resenstein, that this was all clusters that touch either side. And clusters that just touch the bottom, you don't care if they touch the top. Just touch the top, you don't care if they touch the bottom. And then the probability of touching both is touch the bottom, touch the top, and minus touch either. And then what's left is touching both because you double count either. And here's a numerical test. And a little slight deviations between the theory and which is the circles and the experiment with the dot, but that's just because of the discreteness of the end. So here, here's some more two points here, and here I did, here I crossed, that we were talking about before, instead of touching one point, I touch anywhere on the top boundary. So here we touch these two points together. Here I went from here to anywhere on the top boundary. And you can see that near the bottom anchor, the density is going to be the same. It doesn't really care if it's at one point or any point. Here I did a computer simulation. There are a lot of other results here. For example, you take the half-infinite strip, which is that rectangle stretched out infinitely high, and then the density along the bottom is just sine pi x to the 1/3. But if you take that same real high and you go higher up, the density is sine pi x to the 1/48. And there are other things too. Maybe I won't go into these. You can look at the density. You have the crossing density, the open end, what the density is. I think I have a few minutes because I wanted to show you, switch over to Mathematica. I just got tired of transferring everything over to PowerPoint, so I'll just show you Mathematica what the results are. And so here's some more results over here. Here is the half-infinite system. We could actually solve it for not even a single point, but a whole interval here, but the density is in the interval. You can barely see the formula here. That could be solved also. Now, you could take this interval here and kind of let one side go to infinity or enlarge this point here. And here you have a half-infinite system or a half-infinite line, and you look at the density of all the clusters that touch that half-infinite line right there. Then you could say, well, how about the other side? Here's the density of clusters that touch this half-infinite line. Now you can do that same calculation I showed you before. You could say the ones that touch this line plus the one that touch that line minus the ones that touch either line, which is just that simple y to the 1148 power. And you put it all together, then you're left with the clusters that simultaneously touch both those lines. So these are clusters that simultaneously touch one point to the right and one point to the left of the origin there. And it's interesting, it's a very sharply peaked function over here. Then, this is what you could do with this. Then you do the conformal transformation of this, and you can make it over to the strip, and that's actually how we found the result, the density of the strip between the two sides, is take these two half infinite lines and flip them over and then make the strip out. So, I already showed you those. There's two together over there. And here's the two together, the short Schwarzkopf transformation. Here you can, so you can put those two points anywhere you want and calculate what the density contours are. You can, for example, you can put the two points right at the opposite corner, and that's what the density looks like. And these are the results I showed you before. One corner, and this is a result of touching both sides. There are a few more I wanted to show you. Let's see. Let's forget that right now. And I guess I pretty much showed you all of them. So anyway, this is a little fun sort of thing you can do. It takes about 1 minute. I'm mathematic and make these beautiful plots. So anyway.